How did the New York Jets get here? We're going to begin a series today exploring the legacies of recent Jets general managers. We're talking Terry Bradway's Jets tenure on today's episode of the Locked On Jets podcast.
You are Locked On Jets, your daily New York Jets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome. This is the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It's Wednesday, June 29th, 2022, and I'm your host, John B. from gangrenenation.com. Thanking you for making the show your first listen or your first watch. We're free and available on all platforms, including YouTube. Big shout out to subscribers to this podcast. And to join that group, just hit the subscribe button and you'll receive notifications as new episodes are posted. And if you're watching on YouTube, please give this episode a big thumbs up. Helps the channel out, and it helps other Jets fans find Locked On Jets. We are kind of in the quiet point of the NFL calendar, so I wanted to take the show in a bit of a different direction. I wanted to explore how the Jets got to the point where they are at. So this is the first in a five-episode series where I will break down with my friend McGregor Wells, who writes with me at gangrenenation.com, the legacies of recent Jets general managers. We begin with Terry Bradway, who was the Jets general manager for 5 years from 2001 through 2005. Let's jump into my chat with McGregor about the Terry Bradway legacy.
Terry Bradway. The Jets hired him in 2001 after Bill Parcells left the organization. Parcells retired as a coach after the 1999 season, but he stayed on for another year after that as GM. He left after the 2000 season. And the Jets ended up hiring Terry Bradway. Now, Bradway, I always think that there's kind of a story when you hire a GM. There's like this a theory why he's going to be great. Bradway was kind of like the super scout who was going to come in. He was going to be a brilliant talent evaluator. We've had this story a couple of times since with the Jets. It didn't really work that well. And joining me is my friend McGregor Wells, who writes with me at gangrenenation.com. I think part of the reason Bradway got the job is he came from Kansas City, but early in his career, he had worked with the Giants. And I think like Parcells was still part of the search, and Bradway had worked with the Giants when Parcells was there. McGregor, welcome. Where do we begin with Terry Bradway?
I think that's a good place to begin. Bradway actually... He actually worked with the USFL, the old USFL, way back, and he actually won two championships there, and he won two championships for the Giants, and I think those championship backgrounds were the reason the Jets were interested in hiring him, and of course, it didn't work out with the Jets.
So you know what's interesting, and we were talking a little bit before we began recording, and we've been emailing back and forth on Bradway over the last couple of days to prepare for this show, and like, I had this memory of like Bradway being just an awful drafter. And like, I went through the history and it's not like it was great, but it wasn't as bad as I remembered it. I mean, I'll take you through some of the picks. His first draft, 2001, picks Santana Moss with his in the first round. Went on to have a very good career, mostly with Washington. And we'll get to that later because there's a whole story behind that, which we'll get on Bradway for. Lamont Jordan in the second round, who was drafted to be the heir apparent to Curtis Martin. And essentially, Curtis Martin just like kept producing. Like they thought, I think they thought Lamont eventually like Martin would wear down and like Jordan would take over. But Lamont Jordan was a really solid complement to Curtis Martin and went on to Oakland and had a 1,000-yard season in his own right. Third round that year, Kareem McKenzie, a very solid right tackle. You know, you look through some of the other drafts that he had. I mean, there were some pretty bad misses through the years, but you know. 2003, second round, Victor Hobson, who was, you know, okay. 04, Jonathan Vilma, really good linebacker. Jericho Cotri in the fourth round. Eric Coleman, a guy I had forgotten about. Fifth round pick, day one starter at the safety position. Started for the Jets for a number of years. You look to his last draft in 05. Sione Puha in the third round. Kerry Rhodes in the fourth round. I mean, it's not great, but it's not. And maybe this is just like because of my frame of reference is the last decade of Jets drafting, which has just been abysmal, but like it's not as bad as I remember it being.
No, I agree with you. Bradway wasn't terrible at drafting at all. He was actually pretty decent. It was one of his only really good skills as a GM, but the problem wasn't his drafting. The problem was more of his holding on to players. He would draft good players and then we'd lose them over and over and over again. We lost good players year after year. That was a real problem with how the Bradway regime ended is we didn't end up with keeping the great players that were drafted.
Yeah, you know, you can go. I think that there were lots of problems with Bradway because, like, I view this as like he actually wasn't like, again, not a great talent evaluator, but not an awful talent evaluator. It's just like it seems to me like every other aspect of the job kind of eluded him. And like we could go through like a list of like all these different things that like he kind of failed at. I mean, where do you want to begin?
To me, the beginning is where he just never kept the good young players that the Jets had. In the 2002 expansion draft of the Texans, the Jets lost three players in the first seven picks. I mean, they had 30 whatever teams available, and the Jets had three of the first seven picks taken off their team. Their two starting cornerbacks and a starting tackle, offensive tackle.
I remember this, and there actually was a reason for this, and I actually looked this up to like make sure like my memory was correct, is they were way over the cap at that point. And essentially, like, the two corners were very expensive. And the tackle, I think it was Ryan Young, who they let. It was essentially a deal they worked out where Houston would take these two expensive corners to get the Jets under the cap. And part of the deal was, like, okay, if you do this, we'll give you this young tackle. But, like, I think you could look at that and say, like, is that the best way to go about this? Like, giving up both corners? Because the guys they replaced Aaron Glenn and Marcus Coleman with were not that good. And, like, I remember that playoff game a year later in Oakland where the corners who replaced them got absolutely torched.
Yeah, absolutely. And it didn't end there. You had the illusion to the Redskins.
Let's go through this. And like, this is like, they lost four players to Washington after the 2002 season. Each was more ridiculous than the last in free agency. Now there was John Hall, the kicker. And like, I don't know how I never trusted John Hall in a big moment. I know he hit the kick in Oakland in 2001 that made the sense of the playoffs, but there were lots of like shaky moments for John Hall. So like that's, you know, they played Washington week one in the 2003 season, and John Hall made the kick that won the game in the last minute of the fourth quarter. But John Hall, I can live with. Like, and I interviewed John Hall like a decade ago, and like he was a great interview. Like I actually got to meet him, and like he was really engaging interview. But like not a guy I ever trusted as a kicker. But like, okay, let's go to Randy Thomas, you know, a young quality guard, went on to have a great career, a really good career with Washington. Like, not the guy you want, but the last two are just like so ludicrous that like I still can't get over it. Let's begin with Lavernius Coles, because of the two, this was the most damaging one. Okay, like Chad Pennington has a breakout season, first year as a starting quarterback in 2002. His go-to guy is Coles. Coles has a breakout season in his own right. I think he's like 25, has like 1,200 yards. You let this guy go in free agency? But it gets worse because he is a restricted free agent. And, you know, like the way restricted free agency works is you can like give this guy a one-year, you can give each restricted free agent a one-year offer. Depending on how big the offer you give, that determines how much compensation you get if you lose the guy. They don't even put the highest offer on Coles. Like they put the offer that gets them a first-round pick. But there was a higher offer, which would have cost Washington a first and a third round pick. They don't do that for your number one receiver who just had a breakout season with your young quarterback. But I actually looked into this. Here's something I did not realize. That deal was backloaded. So you can't even like look at this and say like the Jets like saved their cap because they signed Curtis Conway to replace him. This old guy was a complete bust. They didn't even save any. Like I looked this up. Coles cap hit in 2003, the first year of that contract, was like $2.3 million. If you like equate that for the cap to it was like a $6 million cap hit for your number one. It was not even a top 15 cap hit at the wide receiver position. And by the way, it was so expensive at the back end of the contract, the Jets actually traded to get Coles back 2 years later when the deal actually got expensive. Like I knew this was going to launch me because this was so illogical on so many fronts. Like how this, I still can't, we are almost 20 years later. I still cannot believe Terry Bradway. Now, see, this is why I had bad memories of Terry Bradway, because he did this. He did that. Like, it just made no sense at all. And the guy they signed, Curtis, they signed this bust free agent, Curtis Conway, who's like old, washed up. And he's not even like that. He doesn't even save you that much money. Like, the only thing I can even think about is like, maybe like Woody Johnson didn't want to pay the signing bonus or something. But like, it just makes no sense.
Yeah, and it even makes less sense when you think about the rookie wage scale didn't kick in until 2011. So that first round draft that they got back was not nearly as valuable as it would have been 10 years later.
We're going to get into that too, because something else happened with that pick, but we have to get to Chad Morton, who was a return. So this was actually far less damaging than Cole's, but it was just like maybe more mind-boggling the Jets' approach to this, because it just, it was completely illogical. Morton was he was a return guy. He actually won their week one game against Buffalo in 02. We had two kickoff returns for touchdowns, including he actually ran the overtime kickoff back for a touchdown. Washington signed him as a restricted free agent, and the Jets like did this thing where like, so if you're a restricted free agent and the other, you can sign an offer sheet with another team, but like your original team can match the contract, and then you get the player on the contract that he signed with the other team, which the Jets should have done with Coles, which they didn't for some reason. But Bradway did this thing where like they tried to match part of the deal, and like essentially, I think I was reading up on this because I was interested to find, because I remember like them only matching part of the deal. Apparently they like thought there was some loophole in the rule book. Washington put voidable years on the end of it, which kind of like manipulates the cap situation. And the Jets somehow like, I don't even know how they did this, but like they matched everything except the voidable years. So this thing goes to arbitration. And this is like, now I'm not a lawyer. I think you have legal training here, but like this case goes to arbitration, and the arbitrator awards Morton to Washington because he says like the Jets did not match the offer, which, I mean, if you want to keep the guy, you match the offer. Like how you get this cute, I don't know. But here's the kicker. The arbitrator, and he made it known beforehand, this is not like this happened, came out after the fact that he was hiding this. He was a Washington season ticket holder, which is like, you ask the guy, this is a clear conflict of interest if you're the Jets. You say like this guy has a vested interest in helping Washington. Like it boggles the mind. And then like losing Morton was like far less damaging than losing Coles. Like, I don't even think they really missed Morton because they had Mike Westhoff, who, like, you know, you plug anybody in the kickoff return guy and he's going to be an all pro with Mike Westhoff. But like, it kind of shows like just the, I don't know if dysfunction is the right word because of what came, you know, later GMs, and later GMs certainly were worse than Bradway, but it just shows like how it goes. I just have this thing with GMs where a lot of them come from like scouting backgrounds, and like everybody always gets fired up when you get the GM from the scouting background. Oh, we're going to have a great talent evaluator, but there's so much more that goes into the job. It's like running the entire front office. And like, I'm sure Bradway is not the guy who's like, they're arguing the case on the Jets' behalf, but like just to like the areas where like they messed up, or like that goes to the top.
Yeah. I had forgotten about that whole Chad Morton thing. So this was almost like news to me, but
it wasn't like that big of a deal. Cause like losing it really didn't hurt them, but it was just like, right, the process was so unbelievably bad.
How do you not catch that? And how do you not match the voidable years? I mean, that was a nothing.
I've been watching the NFL for, I think this will be like the 30th year I've watched the NFL. And like, the only case I've ever seen where a team thought they could like match a restricted free agent deal with only part of the deal, though. Like, I've never seen that before or since. Like,
and I don't get the point of what they did. I don't understand it.
That's the thing, is it seemed like so low upside. If you want to keep the guy, keep him. Terry Bradway was the Jets general manager 20 years ago, and that was around the time rockauto.com started serving customers. They've been helping do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Our episode today is brought to you by rockauto.com, and you should know that with the ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's impossible for that chain auto parts store in your neighborhood to stock all the parts you need. And they ask you this pointless questioning, and you have to wait while the person behind the counter is ordering parts, but it's the only part their warehouse happens to carry. And they're ordering it on their computer. Well, you have a computer with access to rockauto.com at home and in your pocket. You can save time and money when using them, and their prices are reliably low for each customer. So go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck, and write "Locked On" in their "How Did You Hear About Us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. This leads into like another one where like Bradway messed up, because they did get Washington's first round pick. So they entered the 2003 draft with two first round picks. And essentially, like, and the rumor has always been that like they got freaked out because they thought New England was going to move up for Dwayne Robertson. So they packaged their two first round picks and move up for Dwayne Robertson. And then later they find out like Dwayne Robertson's got a knee condition after they draft him that's going to like really impact his, like, you know, Dwayne Robertson was drawing, I mean, another name we don't like to hear when we talk about Jets draft infamy, Warren Sapp. But, you know, like they find out like after they draft him, he has like this knee condition that's not going to get better. That's going to like limit his career. And look, I'm not a doctor. I don't know what's going on. But again, like this is another thing that kind of like shows that the Jets front office at this time, something was missing.
Yeah, it just shows a terrible lack of process. I think he Bradway was relying on his scouting acumen without really mastering any of the other aspects of the job, and not bringing other people who may have mastered them for him. And I got to confess, I liked Robertson. I really liked Robertson when he was coming out. And then it turns out it was a disaster too. But
it was a disaster because of the knee, which nobody could have known about. Which right. I mean, you wouldn't have had his medicals, but the Jets probably should have. You would think
exactly.
All these years later, I actually have some more Bradway blunders. Where do you have any you'd like to discuss?
Well, he lost also Kareem McKenzie to the Giants, right? Was another. I mean, he kept on losing these really good players.
How about Jason Ferguson?
Yeah,
Jason Ferguson leaves for Dallas after 04.
Right. He lost Derek Ward, which at the time was nothing. But, you know, in the end, Derek Ward ended up being a 1,000-yard rusher for the Giants. He let him take him off the practice squad. Now, of course, he was on the practice squad. You say, well, you know, the Jets had better players. I understand that. But there was a pattern of losing good players, young good players, players that could still be there for 6 or 7 years and give quality play, and just lost one after another. It's a really bad track record. He would bring guys in and then lose them. He brought Santana in to replace Moss. I mean, Santana to replace Coles, and then he lost Santana Moss to get Coles back. I mean, that's crazy.
This is what drives me nuts. Is like they got Coles back, which is great, but now you lost Santana Moss, and of course, right. Like the year they trade Santana Moss, everything falls apart. Pennington gets hurt, and like Moss goes to Washington, and I think he's second team All Pro. He has this amazing season with Washington, so you look ridiculous. They should have grown up together. It should have been like Moss. I know, but they were both kind of small. But like those two should have grown up together. They were perfect complements to each other.
How great would have that been to have Santana Moss and Avernus Cole for 10 years each? That would have been an awesome decade for the Jets. What could have been?
What could have been? Indeed. I mean, there's one other free agency blunder that like really comes to mind for me. Let's see. Can you guess it?
I'm drawing a blank here.
Antoine Winfield.
Oh,
when he didn't close the deal with Antoine. So this is another case where like brings in Antoine Winfield for a free agent visit. I think it's before the 04 season. And like the deal apparently, and again, like I'm looking this up because like I want to make sure like my memory's right. And like my memory was exactly right. Where like they had the deal done and then Antoine Winfield leaves and signs in Minnesota, goes on to be great for, you know, another probably 5-6 years. Like, and I always, we're going to get to like how he ended up staying with the Jets, because I have a really good joke for later on when we get, because the Bradway story is not complete until we talk about the fact that like after he stopped being GM, he remained with the Jets for like another 7 years, another 2 GMs, which I don't know how that happens, but we'll get to that. But we have more to discuss, because we have to go to that 05 draft, which is the weirdest draft I've ever seen a team have, because in round three, they get Sione Puha, who it takes, you know, 4 or 5 years, but he develops into a heck of a nose tackle for the Jets. In round four, he drafts Kerry Rhodes, who, you know, was a day one, back to back years. The Jets got guys, it wasn't day three back then. I think the draft was only a 2-day event, but they get guys like the year before, they draft Eric Coleman in round five, who's day one starter for them. 05, they draft Kerry Rhodes round four, who's a day one starter for them. I mean, they got these guys, they got their safety duo in like the fourth and fifth round back to back years. And Rhodes had a couple of years where he was a borderline Pro Bowler. And it's amazing because the Jets really hit it out of the park round three, round four, but round one, round two, not quite as good. And I'm being very generous. You're laughing because you know how generous I'm being with. There are so many different angles we could go with round one, round two. Go ahead.
No, I'll let you take it. I think you
set it up well. This was a year where the Jets could have used the tight end, because I remember this. I was in college. I like my football acumen was not as sophisticated then as it is now. But like, I was looking at this, and there's this tight end out of Virginia, Heath Miller. I'm like, he's going to be there when the Jets pick. Like, this will be a great fit. Okay, well, the Jets don't take Heath Miller. Heath Miller gets drafted by Pittsburgh. Like, has a great career. I mean, I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer. Some people call him. I don't know if he's a Hall of Famer, but guy was like around Pittsburgh for like a decade. It was just a really solid tight end. Bradway trades out of the first round to get Doug Jolly from Oakland, who I think lasted 1 year with the Jets, did nothing. I still couldn't believe, like, I was like, I remember, like, I was in my college dorm room, like, Googling, like, who is this guy? Like, why did they, like, I'm trying to, like, figure out some rationale for why Bradway wanted Doug Jolly. Like, I can't figure it out.
That was crazy.
It's like, if you wanted Doug Jolly, you did not need to trade out of they swapped their first round pick for Oakland's second round pick. And like, you didn't need to trade out of the first round if you wanted this guy. Like, it was such an overpay.
It was. And it was another overpay was Justin McCarron's when they traded a second round pick for him.
That shows you the extent of the Bradway experience. Yeah. I meant to bring up Justin McCarron's for a second round pick.
Yeah, he just didn't seem to have any grasp of the value of these picks. And
that's what I go back to with these GMs is like, when you're a scout, your job is this guy good or is he not? When you're a GM, you have like a finite number of resources and you need to figure out how much is this guy worth. It's not just good enough. Can this guy play or can this guy not play? And like, that's what I go back to with like the Bradway mistakes. Like so many of them were not, I mean, every GM has misses. Like you could say like there were some bad, like there was like, I think the worst miss was the 02 draft when they needed a safety and they drafted Brian Thomas over Ed Reed. And that looks really bad, like in retrospect, because like, to be fair, like you could never have known that Ed Reed was going to be like a first ballot Hall of Famer. I don't think you could ever predict, like if anybody knew how good Ed Reed was going to be, like he would have gone much higher. But they drafted John McGraw in the second round at safety, which you're laughing because anybody who saw
it was John almost McGraw, as good.
almost. And that's actually like one of those cases where like, That draft above all others is the one that like makes me cringe whenever somebody says, "Oh, just get a guy at this position in the second round," because right, like that was right. that was the rationale behind passing on Ed Reed for John McGraw. But this has happened, you know. Like even that one, Brian Thomas ended up like actually lasting with the Jets for a decade or so, and he was okay. I mean, he was not a great first round pick. Like he was a role. If you drafted Brian Thomas in the fourth round, you would have loved the pick. First right. round, he was kind of a disappointment, but like that's a missed evaluation. This other stuff where it's like, this is where I get on Bradway. It's not so much that, it's more just like the lack of understanding value, the stuff with Washington where like the team building issues where you let Coles get away, the medical, whatever was going on with the medical staff at that point. I mean, there's just a lot that was missing at that time.
Continuing with that 2005 draft, that was the year that the Jets drafted the kicker.
It was. Round, right? Well, the backstory to this is they were in the divisional playoffs in 04. They actually had a really good team. And I think as much as we're killing Bradway right now, like they actually put together a pretty good team in 04.
Right.
They won 10-6 in the regular season. They go into Pittsburgh. It's Roethlisberger's rookie year. Steelers are 15-1. The Jets should have won the game. And they lost because Doug Bryan misses two field goals in the last 2 minutes. So he missed. And the thing you have to remember is that at this time, like Heinz Field was known as like a very, very difficult place to kick. The Steelers, when they moved into Heinz Field, when they moved from Three Rivers Stadium to Heinz Field, I think it was 01, they had this kicker, Chris Brown, who was a really good kicker, and they had to get rid of him because he couldn't kick in that stadium. Like it was just, I don't know if it was the winds, what it was, but like it was a notoriously difficult stadium to kick in the early days of its existence. And like Brian, I think it was right before the 2 minute warning, the game was tied and Brian actually hit it pretty well and hit the crossbar. And on the first play after Pittsburgh got the ball back, Roethlisberger airmails this throw. I think David Barrett picks it off and the Jets are in business. And for whatever reason, Herm and Paul Hackett, it was the offensive coordinator, decided to like play for a long field goal where it was clearly in Brian's head at that point where like, He knows that he missed. He knows that like it's the stadium's in his head, and like the Jets just I think they hit a screen pass to Curtis Martin to like put them on like the fringes of field goal range, and then they just ran out the clock and just played for like this long field goal. And Brian did. I mean, yeah, he tried to like hit it so hard that like the ball hooked a million miles to the left and never had a shot. So the Jets lost this playoff game that they should have won because of the kicker. And like this was the classic Jets move, the classic overreaction is we draft a kicker in the second round.
Yeah, that is absolutely nuts. I went berserk. I don't usually get that worked up in the draft because I tend to think that I don't know any more than these guys do. But I mean, drafting a kicker in the second, I just went banana. I just, you got to be kidding me. It was just, you just threw the draft away there. Why would you do this? This is insane. I don't, you can pick a kicker off the street. You can trade for it. I mean, you got to be kidding me. This is nuts.
Because Doug Bryan missed the two field goals in Pittsburgh.
I don't go nuts like every draft like a lot of Jets fans do. But that when I lost it.
I actually kind of have a hot take on this where, like, if I feel like if he was like Justin Tucker, like there's like an argument that he's worth it. But I think the problem, and I'll argue with myself, the problem is like, the league has shown like they really can't evaluate kickers, because like, look at the guys who go high. It's like, Aguayo when Tampa Bay traded up for him and he didn't last in the NFL. And like Justin Tucker himself was an undrafted free agent. And like every year you see these teams give out these big kicker contracts in free agency and they frequently don't work. I mean, look at the guy Cincinnati had, McPherson. He was a fifth round pick. I mean, you said he was a fifth round pick to get him. So yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Like, I've never seen a team have that bad of a first two rounds and that good of a rounds three and four as the Jets had in 05. It was a very interesting draft class. And, I go back to it's funny because like crushing Bradway, as much as we crushed Bradway, they did make the playoffs three of the five seasons that he was the GM. And I guess that goes back. Like, he did have a decent eye for talent. I mean, he did bring in some guys who could play. He hit on some draft picks, and then the 05 season comes along, and I don't think I've ever seen a team have worse injury luck than the Jets did that season. I mean, and the thing is, like, I look back on that and like the AFC was there for the taking. That was one of New England's worst teams of the Brady Belichick. That was one of the few New England teams that really did not have a shot to win the Super Bowl. Pittsburgh was not as good as they were the year before. Like, Pittsburgh ended up winning the AFC. Denver hosted the AFC championship game that year, and Jake Plummer was their quarterback. And I mean, that season really frustrates me because Pennington was coming off an injury that ended the 04 season. And like, he played hurt at the end of 04 because like, there were all these stories. They went to the playoffs and like, there's stories like Pennington can't throw the ball past 5 yards, which Armstrong was never like Pennington's like forte, but like, it was really, it was noticeable in 04. And like, you begin the 05 season, the Jets have made all these moves. They brought Coles back. They actually signed Ty Law from New England, who at the time may have been the best corner in the NFL. And you can see from week one, like, they go to Kansas City, they get crushed, and Pennington looks off. Like, Pennington doesn't look like he could throw. And to this day, I still don't understand why, like, they, and like, there was all this talk, like, the Jets made a big deal. I remember in training camp that year, the Jets made a big deal that like, Pennington's on the pitch count, which kind of showed you the state he was in coming off surgery. And like, they actually went out and got Jay Fiedler, who was actually, for a backup in the NFL, was incredible-ish. Like, mm-hmm. They spent a decent amount of money to get Jay Fiedler as their backup quarterback. And like, I never understood like why they put Pennington out there so early. And like, listen, you can't, I don't know what happened exactly, but Pennington goes down for the season in week three, which, and I always wondered why they, I was wondering if they regretted putting him out there. And then Fiedler actually, I think, went down like the next series. So like, they lose their top two quarterbacks week three that year. I mean, this was like, to me, like, this was like the thing people don't remember. This was kind of like the sequel to Vinny 99 tearing his Achilles. Like, the season was over at week three and they have a million. Curtis Martin, who never got hurt that year and like really was a shell of himself. I think, like, I remember looking that up, like, half of their opening day starting lineup ended up on IR that year. It was just like a disaster year. And it was the kind of year that leads to like things being cleaned out. And, that was, I guess that was like Bradway's kind of the end of his Jets GM tenure. Although he did kind of stay on. They didn't fire him. Like, he stayed on like halfway through the off season.
Just long enough to hire Eric Mangini as the new coach, which was his last move. And, he started out with Herm Edwards and ended with Eric Mangini. And there's just sort of kind of bookends to his career as Jets GM. And neither one of those coaches were good enough. They were okay. They weren't terrible. They just weren't good enough, though.
Right. And then he kind of switched places with Mike. Well, he didn't switch places because Tannenbaum was doing the cap then. And Bradway moved into like more of a quote-unquote senior scouting role. Of course, today we're talking about Terry Bradway's Jets tenure. Bradway was the Jets general manager from 2001 through 2005. We're talking a little bit about the past of the Jets. But if you're looking to the future and you want to make some money, you should know betonline.net is your number one source for all of your betting needs and sports info. You can find all of the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news. And BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, and scores.
and betonline.net remains the best spot for all of your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. It's the fastest and easiest way to check on all your favorite sports and events, including MMA, boxing, and golf. You can head to the website or use your mobile device to learn more about the trends in action. You can even bet on NFL futures, Jets getting good odds. If you like what Joe Douglas did this past offseason, you think the Jets are on their way to big things, you can lay some money down on the Jets at BetOnline. BetOnline, where the game starts. The Bradway Jets story can't be fully told unless you talk about like the fact that this guy who like they kind of fired somehow stayed with the team another 7 years with another, you know, two GMs. It was a very, or I think it was 8 years actually. And it was like very bad. And honestly, like I actually can defend like the first half of that because Tannenbaum and Mangini, they were these two young guys. I think they were both in their 30s, not a ton of experience. You have this guy who, for all of his faults, did have a decent eye for talent. You know, I can see that. But then, like, things kind of went sideways, you know, within the second half of the Tannenbaum era, and they fire him. And he's still around for John Idzik, which made no sense to me at all. And of course, like, no Bradway retrospective can be complete without talking about Russell Wilson.
Right, banging the table.
That was Christian Dyer, who's a longtime Jets writer. He put a tweet out a couple of years ago that was perfect, which was, if you listen closely, you could hear in the distance Terry Bradway pounding the table for Russell Wilson. And so, like 2012, Russell Wilson's rookie year, the Jets are playing Seattle, and all these stories come out about how much Bradway loved Russell Wilson before the pre-draft, which is so convenient because Russell Wilson's now great. And I'm not saying he didn't love Russell Wilson, but like you never hear about it when like somebody loves Jimmy Clausen. It only gets right. leaked to the media when like, when you love somebody like Russell Wilson. It was it's like become a running gag among Jets fans. And it kind of shows you like the way things were near the end of the tenure with Tannenbaum, with Bradway still around. It was just the other thing like I remember from that was the year the Jets drafted Stephen Hill. The Jets traded up for Stephen Hill. If you look like before the start of that season, Rex had a press conference and he didn't really say it the way at the time, but like now in retrospect, it's kind of obvious. Like he knew what was up with Stephen Hill. He was washing his hands of it. So he goes, oh yeah, you know, Terry really loved Stephen Hill. Like it was one of those things, like in the moment, it sounded like he was trying to give Bradway credit, but like
Right. Really
he was trying to like wash his, like, I didn't want any part of Stephen Hill. And it's easy to like say that, but like in fairness to Rex, I don't think Rex wanted to draft a receiver in the second round. So I think like there's probably something to that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if I remember later, Rex was telling people how he looked at Stephen Hill as like, how can this guy possibly help us? I mean, he was really down on Stephen Hill, but that may have been something said later after the fact. I don't know, but that's my memory of it anyway.
But, you know, and then he stays around for Idzik and this was like, the Jets needed to clean house after Tannenbaum left, and he stays around for Idzik. And I always like have this memory, like Idzik in 2014, and we'll get to Idzik, you know, later in this series. But look, Idzik had this disaster 2014 offseason where there was a deep free agent corner class, and Idzik did not sign any of them. And one of the guys they failed to sign, they had Dominique Rogers-Cromartie in the building, and they failed to seal the deal. And I always like had this vision of like, Bradway was the mentor taking Idzik under his wing after like Antoine Winfield in 2004, just showing him how to mess up, how to like not seal the deal with a free agent corner. I thought it was like kind of like a mentor, you know, protege kind of thing where it's like, we're glad we had Terry in the building for this. So he could show me how to mess this thing up. Cause it's good to have somebody in there with a track record of messing up signing free agent corners.
Capstone of Terry's career, I guess. Yeah. That was, Idzik era was really bad. I just don't know how Bradway lasted that long. That's a very unusual situation where you have a former GM lasting to two other GMs. I mean, that's nuts. I don't understand how it lasted. But, you know, when you look back, his total body of work was better than the guys that came after him.
That's the thing is, like, at the time, and this has been more negative than I thought it would be, but, like, at the time, like, this was, like, the perspective was Bradway was awful. But I'd take him over a lot of the guys we've had since. Where,
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the team did make the playoffs. Now, granted, he did inherit a decent situation from Parcells. And, like, you know, like he inherited that 2000 draft class with Abraham and Ellis and Pennington. And, you know, there were some decent players on the team. He did that. Like, we went through the players he drafted in the early stages of this episode. He brought in some decent talent. he just wasn't a guy who could really put it all together. He was a guy who I think was just a better scout than he was a GM.
Yeah, I think that's right. But you got to, I'll say this, every time the Jets during that whole decade from 2001 to 2010, every time the Jets had a healthy quarterback, they won every single year. They won. They didn't go to the Super Bowl. They were never really serious Super Bowl contenders until 2009, 2010. By that time, almost all of Bradway's guys were gone. But yeah, I mean, he kept the Jets competitive for a good decade almost. So
it's like you said, if he could have kept the guys who were good on the team, right? We would have had something here. If he keeps Coles in 2002, and you have Coles, Santana Moss, and I don't know what happened with Pennington. I don't think he should have been playing at the beginning of the 2005 season. If Pennington doesn't get hurt, that's really what undid him. Because like I said, despite all the criticisms I have of him, that 2005 team, I feel like could have made some noise, and it just had unbelievably bad injury luck. And then it was time for a reset. And I think you get to the end of the 2005 season, and maybe it wasn't all his fault, but it's time for a reset. Is this really the guy who's going to bring you to the Super Bowl? Well, probably not.
Probably not. I'll tell you what, though. The Jets, for two decades, the Jets GMs and head coaches had the misfortune of coaching against, in the same division, the best quarterback-coach combination in league history. And it's just like, none of these guys were ever going to win a Super Bowl with those guys in the division, So it was a very difficult position for any GM to be in. And so, not to excuse Bradway's mistakes, but I just don't know anyone was going to take this to
the Super Bowl. I'll say this, there's this perception the Jets have been awful since Woody Johnson took over. The first half of Woody Johnson's tenure, when Bradway was the GM for a good part of that, they actually were a pretty competitive football team for much of this era. So I want to make, because there are going to be guys we talk about later in the series where I'm going to have virtually nothing good to say about them. Bradway was, again, this may be faint praise because the guys who came after him, Bradway was not awful. I mean, he was mediocre. I think what I'd say is he was mediocre. He wasn't awful. There were some very good things you could say about Terry Bradway. There's going to be some guys where I'm not going to have many good things to say about them.
Yes, I agree. There are plenty of guys that came after him that were not as good as Terry Bradway. But Bradway's strength was in drafting, and the rest of his job was he wasn't very good at it. And he didn't, it's okay not to be very good at all these aspects, but you got to bring in people who are good at it and do that aspect of the job for you. And he never really did that.
All right, well, we'll make that the final word. McGregor, thank you for joining me for the first part of this series. And next time we will discuss the guy who took over for Bradway, Mike Tannenbaum.
Looking forward to it.
That's all for today's episode. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast. It's part of the Locked On Podcast Network. As always, if you enjoy the show, hit that subscribe button. If you're watching on YouTube, big thumbs up. It helps the channel out, and it helps other Jets fans find Locked On Jets. Until next time, have a great day, everybody. Look forward to chatting more about the Jets with you in the days ahead.